Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. Today is March 16th, 2022, and our first story. Amid a fear of rising tensions between the U.S. and China and possible war, the U.S. has deployed Marines to Australia for joint combat drills. The U.S. is also conducting drills with Japan for similar reasons. In our next story, a Black Lives Matter activist who raised over $1 million has been indicted for fraud. 18 different counts between her and her husband. The question is, when will people wake up to the con? In our last story, last night, the bomb squad arrived at our studio. I'll give you an update on how I feel about this, what I can tell you about it, and a general idea of what's happening with trying to silence voices like ours. If you like the show, give us a good review, leave us 5 stars, share the show with your friends. Now, let's get into that first story. Vladimir Putin once again standing strong, saying that the West's attempt at global dominance will fail and that Russia will prevail in Ukraine. Now, according to the Biden administration, Putin is slow rolling this. It's kind of what I expected. And they feel that he's trying to bait the U.S. into crossing the line, or bait NATO into crossing the line, so that they can be justified in their use of force. Welcome to the future of warfare. Everyone's saying, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, while Russia is actively invading a country and civilian residences and cities are being destroyed. And it's kind of brutal. But outside of Russia, there is a fear that this could escalate beyond just a Ukraine-Russia conflict and just NATO-Russia. Obviously, we've talked about the fear of China getting involved in some kind of war or making this some kind of World War III. Depending on who you ask, they'll say World War III has already begun. We just can't keep trying to, we can't expect World War III to look like some kind of movie or like World War II. Certainly China right now is taking advantage of what's happening in Ukraine and with Russia to try and subvert U.S. interests. Previous reporting just the other day, Saudi Arabia may switch off the dollar in terms of sales with China for oil and use the yuan. This, of course, will begin the unseating of the U.S. reserve currency. It could be very serious for global stabilization, but more so for American authority around the globe. Now we've got new breaking news. The United States will deploy thousands of troops in the Northern Territory of Australia after Australia admitted war with China is possible. We also have reporting that the U.S. and Japan are conducting combat drills amid a growing fear about a Chinese and Russian threat. This could be nothing. Outside of the Daily Mail, which I think is giving us perhaps a bit of analysis, which may be incorrect, in their framing at least, this is viewed, or at least being reported officially, as just a training exercise in the Northern Territories of Australia. Darwin, to be specific. But this is, my understanding, it's the first time U.S. Army servicemen, I believe it's actually Marines, are being deployed to Australia. And we have already seen the U.S. and Australia, I believe the U.S., Australia, and the U.K. have a defense pact providing military and naval equipment to Australia. China, of course, is already upset about it. All of this has been bubbling up for the past several years, technically longer. And now with what's happening between Ukraine and Russia, these tensions between Australia, the U.K., the U.S., China, seem to be, well, persisting, and hopefully not escalating, but it may be the case. We already saw a lot of tensions previously when the U.S. did their elephant walk in Guam, but then all of a sudden pulled our Air Force out of this off this Air Force base, scared that Chinese missile strikes could hit our air base and wipe out all of our air power seemingly instantly. We've had China send in their strike group in the South China Sea and the Strait of Taiwan, the U.S. then doing the same thing, and all of this well before there was a ground war in Ukraine. Of course, now the United States is issuing a warning to China not to subvert our interests amid the ongoing conflict with Ukraine and Russia. Will China listen? I think it's kind of sad and pathetic, but I guess it's better than nothing. You know, having the U.S. go to China and be like, don't you do it, when China's already doing everything, seems pointless. Will China back down? I don't see why they would. Will Russia back down? I don't see why they would. Joe Biden is weak. The U.S. administration is weak. Our country is fractured politically and culturally. Now is the time to strike. For China and Russia, the iron is hot. So when we get reports that U.S. Marines are being deployed into Australia for a six-month training mission, you must look at the greater context around what is happening around the world and what has happened already between the U.S., Australia, and China. And then I think it is fair to say, perhaps these training drills do have a strong correlation with what is happening internationally in terms of war. It's not just that the U.S. and Australia are going to say, let's just train together. No, it's probably more to do with what's happening in terms of conflict. ABC News says Japan-U.S. Marine combat drills held amid China and Russia worry. You see, China and Russia are worried about what we're doing, we're worried about what they're doing, and no one's going to back down. Well, let's get into the news and see if there is a real prospect for an escalation of this war, a potential hot World War III globally, maybe not. I don't like to say it. But let's read the news. Before we get started, head over to TimCast.com. Become a member if you would like to support our work. As a member, you are keeping all of our journalists gainfully employed and making sure the website functions. But you'll also get access to exclusive members-only podcasts from TimCast IRL with our guests Monday through Thursday. So definitely become a member at TimCast.com. But don't forget to smash that like button right now, subscribe to this channel, and share the URL. Post it wherever you can, Facebook, Twitter, Gab, whatever it is you use. And tell people to give it a watch. That's the best way to support the work that I'm doing right here in this video. But let's read the first story from the Daily Mail. United States will deploy thousands of troops in the Northern Territory after Australia admitted war with China is possible. Thousands of American soldiers trained to use surface-to-air missile systems, high-mobility artillery rockets, and unmanned aircraft are bound for Australia as tensions grow with China. The rotational U.S. Marine Force of about 2,200 servicemen and women will be based in the Northern Territory during the upcoming dry season from September. It is the 11th deployment to the top end, and for the first time will include 250 U.S. Army personnel, the Australian Defense Force announced. The contingent is part of an ongoing U.S. initiative in the Indo-Pacific region to prepare for a possible Chinese invasion of Taiwan in coming years. Defense Minister Peter Dutton in September warned conflict with China shouldn't be discounted, and on Wednesday told the U.S. Studies Center Beijing may look to U.S. Studies Center Beijing may, you need a comment there, guys. Beijing may look to annex Taiwan while the world is preoccupied with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The Marine deployment will complement that enhanced air cooperation program between the Royal Australian Air Force and the United States Air Force. About 1,000 Marines have already landed in Darwin. They will train with the ADF to ensure they are able to respond to crises in the region. That could include humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, evacuation missions, and reinforcing U.S. embassies or military operations. Darwin's location just south of more than a dozen Asian countries and some of the world's busiest shipping lanes makes it a strategic stepping-off point. The training will include live-fire military exercises to improve cohesion between Australian and U.S. forces and those of other regional allies. Commander of the ADF's Northern Force, Colonel Marcus Constable, said the U.S. alliance was Australia's most important defense relationship and central to the nation's security plan. We can see here the Daily Mail has included a sea power between the allied forces and China. Interestingly, we can see they show China's naval power, 15 nuclear submarines, 58 non-nuclear submarines, 2 aircraft carriers, 0 cruisers, 40 destroyers, 41 frigates, 72 corvettes, 9 amphibious assault ships, and 235,000 personnel. This is what I find fascinating, however. Take a look over at the United States. 68 nuclear-powered submarines. No non-nuclear-powered submarines. We've got 11 aircraft carriers, 22 cruisers, 70 destroyers. We don't have any frigates or corvettes. 31 amphibious assault ships and 347,200 personnel. The question, however, is the U.S. split on too many fronts? Can you actually compare the U.S. naval power to China when the U.S. Navy has to deal with, say, Venezuela, with the Gulf region in the Middle East? I don't think it's fair to say we can just compare one to one. China is going to be heavily focused with their naval power, for the most part, near Taiwan. The U.S. is spread thin. However, we still have the U.K. with 10 nuclear subs, 2 aircraft carriers, 6 destroyers, 13 frigates, 25,600 personnel, and Australia with 6 non-nuclear subs, 3 destroyers, 8 frigates, 2 amphibious assault ships, and 13,800 personnel. We don't know exactly how things would play out. But if you think it's going to be a sweep by the Western forces, you would be incorrect, man. China? Well, truth be told, we don't know what'll happen, because if you think the weapons we can see with our eyes are all that is available to our militaries, you would be absolutely insane. The Manhattan Project, man. Nobody knew it was coming. Speculation existed. Newspapers were reporting. What could it be? A death ray? Yeah, they actually thought the U.S. may have been building, like, a low-orbit ion cannon. I'm kidding. But they thought it was some kind of, like, death ray, some kind of explosive, perhaps. But they didn't quite understand that we were building the atomic bomb. And then we flattened 2 Japanese cities with it. Well, now, we're not flattening Japanese cities. We're actually working alongside Japan. Truth be told, I think when you look at the flattening of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, then you look at the U.S. occupation of Japan. Yeah, maybe they were just conquered outright overnight thanks to what we would call a gravity bomb. That is when you have a bomber just drop the atomic bomb. You also have ICBMs, which are the, you know, intercontinental ballistic missiles that launch into space and then come down. Or technically the stratosphere is not necessarily space. I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S.? With more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., they have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. This report from ABC News discusses also the fears of escalation with a war with China and how the U.S. and Japan are preparing. ABC News reports, Japanese and U.S. Marines had their first airborne landing and combat training together on Tuesday near Mount Fuji, as the two allies strengthen military cooperation amid growing maritime activity by China and Russia in the regional seas. Japan has been expanding its defense budget and capability for about a decade and is now revising its key national security strategy in the face of threats from China, North Korea, and now Russia. On Tuesday, 400 troops from Japan's Amphibious Rapid Deployment Brigade and 600 U.S. Marines based on Japan's southern island of Okinawa jointly practiced landing and combat operations in a scenario of an enemy invasion of a remote Japanese island using tilt rotor Ospreys, those are cool by the way, amphibious armored vehicles, and artillery such as the M777. Ospreys are so cool. Have you ever seen them? Okay, they look like planes, but they can their propellers can go forward or up. So they can go straight up and then go forward. That's so cool. Where we live in Maryland, We see them flying overhead sometimes. Maybe you see them flying overhead in your cities. I think they're just really cool vehicles, by the way. Man, I tell you what, this stuff's been around for kind of a long time, relatively, as far as I know. And it's just, there's some cool stuff. I mean, Chinooks are cool. It is cool to see Ospreys, I gotta admit. You see a plane, it's like you get it, you know how planes work. You see a helicopter, like we generally understand it, but both, that's cool. Anyway, I digress. The exercise comes at a time when Russia's invasion of Ukraine has intensified worries about what could happen in East Asia, where China's growing assertiveness has escalated tension around Taiwan. While Japan has shifted its security focus to the southwest, it also faces Russia's growing naval activity and its increased cooperation with China. Chief Cabinet Secretary Hirokazu Matsuno said the Japanese Navy spotted a fleet of six Russian warships Monday passing the Soya Strait between Hokkaido and Sakhalin as part of Russia's major naval exercises days after another Russian fleet crossed the Sugaru Strait between Aomori on the northern tip of Japan's main island and Hokkaido. I mean, that's pretty crazy, to be completely honest. They're getting pretty close to Japan. We also had reporting not that long ago that Russian helicopter violated Japanese airspace, around the same time violating Swedish airspace. Yo, Russia, what are you doing? Yeah, Vladimir Putin seems to be ready to go out with a bang. And that kind of desperation and this kind of aggressive behavior is seriously worrying. Look, I got my complaints with what the United States does, but Vladimir Putin is the one swinging the club right now. People got to understand, you got to take a look at a map of the world. Did you know that Russia, I think it's like what, like 50 to 100 kilometers from Japan? Russia borders the Koreas, North Korea specifically, and it also borders Finland. Technically, Russia also borders Poland, and I think, is it Lithuania? With Kaliningrad. Yeah. Russia is massive. However, some reports have come out saying that things aren't going as well as Vladimir Putin would have liked in Ukraine. That may be the case. Personally, I don't believe Russia is losing. That sounds kind of absurd. Why would Russia, a massive power, be losing to Ukraine? Could be because NATO forces are supplying the Ukrainians. Maybe we just don't know to the extent. We do know that Biden is offering up money, so that could be the case. But back to the point. We're hearing that Russia is being forced to pull in troops and forces from the east of Russia to bolster its operation in Ukraine. Maybe. We're also hearing that Russia, well, let me just read you the headline. Russian state TV discusses how Putin could invade NATO Baltic states and force Sweden to declare neutrality. It's just TV. It's some crazy people on TV. What does that mean? When you get like Rachel Maddow saying her crazy stuff, we should not be taking her seriously, but you need to understand that she absolutely led the charge for what? Tens of millions of conspiracy-driven lunatics who thought Donald Trump worked for Russia. She nearly cried when it turned out it wasn't true. That's a scary prospect. You think about what this means in Russia when their TV is coming on and saying, we can do this. What happens when you get public support for it? It's not a question of if Russia can win. It's a question of if Russia is willing to start the conflict. Because if it does come down to war between Russia and NATO, everyone gets hurt by it. Any fight you can avoid is a fight you've won. But Vladimir Putin doesn't seem all too happy about what's going on. I mean, with everything, it looks like Russia is on the verge of becoming a vassal state to NATO, and Russia is just like, no, thank you. The Daily Mail reports a former senior officer in the Russian army laid out a battle plan on state TV, which includes the Russian army invading the NATO Baltic states and parts of Sweden, a politically neutral country. Speaking live on TV, channel Russia 1, retired Russian military colonel gestured to the map showing Gotland, Sweden's largest island with a population of around 58,595, circled in red. Pointing at a map, Colonel Igor Korotchenko, formerly of the Russian General Staff and Air Force and currently a reserve officer, said at the start of the invasion, a massive Russian radio electronic strike is inflicted as all NATO radars go blind and see nothing, according to the Sun. This was how the scenario for capturing the countries might look, he added. They even have pictures. Look at this. They show personnel standing in Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia with Gotland circled. Of course, you see Kaliningrad right here, actually labeled out. Kaliningrad is not connected to mainland Russia, but it is a Baltic Sea port. It is north of Poland and southwest of Lithuania, and it is a Russian oblast, a Russian state, effectively. They say Sweden has been politically neutral throughout its recent history, but Russia's invasion of Ukraine brought the prospect of the Nordic country joining NATO to the fore of political discussion. Russia has threatened Sweden and Finland over NATO membership repeatedly since the invasion began. At this time, on the Swedish island, Gotland, Russian military planes land delivering S-400 anti-aircraft missile systems and Bastion coastal anti-ship systems, said Colonel Korchenko. In the video, a border area labeled the Suwalki Gap is shown, the gap between Belarus and Russia's Kaliningrad exclave, a leftover territory annexed from Germany after the Second World War. Colonel Korchenko explained how Russia would push up from Kaliningrad towards the Suwalki corridor, separating Poland and Lithuania, blocking NATO reinforcements from the West. I gotta say, isn't this, if you listen to all of my shows, you heard me say this. Now, I never said it would be definitive. I never said they would do this. I said, is it possible? If you take a look at the map, you can see Belarus. Let's not pull up Pinterest. Let's actually just pull up this. If you take a look at Belarus right here and Kaliningrad here, there is a section of land between Poland and Lithuania. And I actually said this. What if from Belarus, Russian forces meet halfway with the Belarusians and cut off Lithuania from Poland? I did say that. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but certainly now they're talking about it on TV. I think everybody sees the same opportunities. It's kind of worrying. In the video, a border area called the Suwalki Gap is shown. This is what we saw. Colonel Kolichko explained how Russia would push up from Kaliningrad towards Suwalki Corridor. The astonished West and NATO will know that Russia declares a no-fly zone of 400 kilometers. The entire Baltic Sea would then be open to Russian forces. The scenario ends with the new Baltic states governments pledging allegiance to Moscow, while Sweden agrees to perpetual neutrality and a 99-year lease on Gotland. That's amazing. We're going to invade you, and then you'll agree to a lease. That's called occupation. Spare me your spin. The program went out on Russian television as the end of last year, but was posted by Ukrainian government advisor Anton Gerashenko. You see, it looks like Russia's been thinking about this for some time. Only days ago, NATO sent tens of thousands of troops, including Royal Marines, and an aircraft carrier, destroyer ship, and a nuclear-powered attack sub to Norway, which borders Russia. Troops from 28 countries in Europe and North America are involved in war games on Russia's border, set to last around a month. So let me just slow things down, my friends. Back to the main point. The U.S. is deploying Marines to Australia, concerned about a war with China. The U.S. and Japan are conducting drills. There is a massive war game with 35,000 troops, 200 aircraft, 50 vessels involved in cold response, including roughly 900 Royal Marines who will spearhead the U.K. involvement. All of this happening Norway, which borders Russia. Do you think Russia and China are sitting back being like, it's no big deal? Or do you think they're sitting back looking at this and saying, the U.S. is preparing for war? Yeah, it seems like the U.S. is preparing for war. We can see this is the HMS Prince of Wales pictured taking part in Cold Response 22. An air crewman looked at the door of his Merlin MK2. F-35s from 207 Squadron RAF Marham conducted a flyby of the NATO flagship HMS Prince of Wales whilst in the area conducting training with the ship. I hope nothing really comes of this. But Vladimir Putin ain't backing down. In this story from Reuters, Putin says Russia will achieve its goals in Ukraine, won't bow to the West. Vladimir Putin said on Wednesday that Russia would achieve its goals in Ukraine, would not submit to what he called a Western attempt to achieve global dominance and dismember Russia. Putin said Russia was ready to discuss neutral status for Ukraine 3 weeks into a war that has killed thousands of people and forced millions of Ukrainians to flee their homes. Let me just say for a moment, my friends, the videos coming out of Kiev are nightmarish. I remember seeing photos of Aleppo, you know, Syria, and how beautiful this country was. And then the photos after the war, and it's terrifying. And now we're starting to see the exact same thing happen in Ukraine. Life's not easy, and life is not fair. The reality is there's conflict. It exists. Western forces want to exert influence over Ukraine and gain access to energy production and distribution. Yes, NATO very much wants global dominance. They don't want anyone to be able to challenge them. Russia doesn't want to be a vassal state to NATO. And thus, Vladimir Putin is willing to do whatever it takes. And that's a dangerous prospect. But who's at fault? Everybody's done something that's pissed somebody else off. Do we want to submit to one global authority? I don't believe it is entirely wrong to say a single global authority is a bad thing. You got many people saying, the globalists, they want to take over, and the elites. Well, let me tell you this. Globalism's not bad. That's right. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. What is bad is authoritarian globalism. What is bad is our constitution being subverted in the name of globalism. If globalism ultimately is an international system of courts that prevents war from ever happening, for the most part, and the United States retains its borders, its sovereignties, and its right to control what happens internally, and it can negotiate trade agreements with other countries, but in the instance of disputes, instead of war, we have a global legal system by which there are judges and decisions to be made, I love the idea. I really do. Put it this way. In the United States, we can secure our borders. We have a constitution. Our laws are our own, and we elect representatives. Perfect. Let's keep it that way. Now, the United States wants to have an agreement with, say, Mexico over certain issues. That's between the United States and Mexico. As for these trade agreements, perfect. Keep it that way. One day, there is a deal that's broken between two neighboring countries. And one side says, I don't like that you've done this, and I demand my rights. The other side says, no, you can't tell me what to do. Instead of one side just bombing the other, what we would have is an adjudication system on an international level to prevent war. I like the idea. It won't always be perfect. But you think about how things work in the United States with cartels. And this can be, in my opinion, a very libertarian kind of globalism. A lot of people don't like the idea of globalism because what they're referring to is authoritarian, totalitarian, or homogenized global takeover. I agree. All of that's bad. What I mean to say is international treaties for dealing with conflict, I think, can be a good thing. TPP, that was a bad thing. We don't want to go that direction. But I look at it this way. In the United States, we have a problem with prohibition. We prohibit alcohol. And what happens? Black market, murder, death, chaos. Why? Because when you can't legally sell booze, and people will no matter what, people then do it outside of the legal system. When you can't alleviate a problem, let's say, it's the prohibition era, and I got a bunch of beer, and I say, here's the beer, you owe me money. And they say, nice try, we ain't paying you nothing. Ha ha, and they take the beer and run. What can I do? Violence breaks out. When it is regulated but legal, I sell the beer, and they say, haha, what can you do? It's called a lawsuit. You file a lawsuit against them, the courts intervene, and they make sure something is done fairly. I have no problem with a kind of system internationally that allows us to live within our countries and our laws and allow countries to retain their cultures and sovereignty, but have a way of avoiding war. That would be a good thing. The reason I bring this up, I am not convinced personally that's what NATO would bring about. And I think that's when you hear Alex Jones and others talk about the globalists, they're certainly not talking about preventing war, because I think most people would be like, yeah, if we could always have a diplomatic approach to ending war, it'd be a good thing.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
No, sorry. What we end up seeing with NATO countries is subversion, deception, manipulation, because they think they're smarter and better than you. And of course, they may come out and say things like, no, we absolutely would love to have what you're describing. Oh, spare me. I don't believe you. We can build a system of negotiations and treaties and stuff. We're kind of starting to see the emergence of this in a certain sense, in that no one wants to be party to this war. The problem is nobody trusts these countries. They have not earned the right to assert any authority over anyone else. Joe Biden is a bad guy. He's corrupt. If someone came to me and said, we're going to appoint this judge in your county, and then you can have your property dispute settled by him, I'd say, no, the dude's crooked. Screw that. I'm protesting. And people are going to resist. Now, what if you had someone respectable and substantially less international authority, and we could prevent war? I'm not saying it's possible. Maybe it's entirely idealistic. But I can certainly understand why you would end up with Vladimir Putin being like, nope, we are not playing that game. But of course, it is Vladimir Putin who invaded Ukraine because he was losing. The reality is, when it comes to international relations, there's always going to be dirty games. When it comes to business, there's always dirty games. I mean, look at it this way. You go for a job interview, and I don't play these games. I really don't. Someone will be like, you know, my minimum salary requirement is $100,000 a year. And they'll go, we'll give you 85. And they go, give me 95. And they'll say, we'll give you 90. 92.5. Okay, deal. Like, that was a waste of everyone's time. It's not a real negotiation. I don't do that. I go to places and I'm like, I want X amount of dollars. And they say, well, we'll give you X minus. And I know I want X amount of dollars. And I'm like, I'm not here to negotiate. I told you what I want. If you can do it, let me know. I'd appreciate it. Otherwise, I'm not going to waste any more time. If it works for you, it works for me. Otherwise, I'm out. So I'm not a fan of playing these games. Anyway, I digress. Back to the story at hand. Could this escalate to something truly devastating? As you have these attempts at securing global authority and power? Yes. Because of crackpot psychopaths like Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham doubles down on call for Putin's assassination. Oh, this is just... resign. Lindsey Graham should not be... I'm just tired. Lindsey Graham's a bad guy. He's a bad guy. Vladimir Putin, for all of his faults and all of his problems, for all of the hate he may get, he runs Russia. You do not want to call for the assassination of someone because you want to negotiate an attempt to alleviate tensions. We are not right now at war with Russia. So let me say, if Russia was operating concentration camps, I guess like the Chinese Communist Party was, if Russia was directly involved in a genocide, you know, China, how's it going? And then we were at war with them and they were invading other countries. Perhaps then if someone came out and said the leader of that country needs to be removed by any means necessary, I'd be like, that's tough, man. But we're beyond negotiations. We're at war. Right now, we're not at war with Russia. Or so we think. Yeah, if Vladimir Putin was assassinated, I don't think it would end this conflict. I think it would maybe in the next 10 or 20 years result in things fizzling out. But Vladimir Putin's almost 70 years old as it is. What's the point of calling for this? What's the point of Lindsey Graham being like, we got to give these planes to Ukraine. It won't start World War III. Bro. Why are we involved? Russia is because they want to be the world police. Because you take a look at how these systems operate. I don't want to live under a totalitarian global regime of world police with a homogenized culture. Sorry. You know what makes me sad? Let me tell you what makes me sad. I went to Japan once. And actually, it's interesting. I went to Fukushima. Many of you maybe heard the story. And I went to, I think we went to Shinjuku. We went to, what's the name of that big crosswalk? You know what I'm talking about. It was cool seeing the neon lights, the billboards of anime characters and the Plinko gaming areas, the fun restaurants. I sang karaoke with one of our friends, our fixer, who brought us into Fukushima. She passed away of cancer, unfortunately, but we got to sing. It was so much fun. It was such a different world in a lot of ways. We parked our car. We drove into this garage where there was a big disc, like on the ground, a big circle. You park on it, you get out, and then you pay, and then it goes down and the car spins, and then it pushes your car into a parking space in this underground, like vending machine, like parking lot. So cool. When we came back to get our car, it opened up and comes out, and we're like, whoa, look at that. It's so cool. I went to the Bahamas once. And when I got off the cruise ship, what did I see? Was it local cuisine, interesting culture? No, it was McDonald's, Starbucks, Gucci, Dolce & Gabbana, Hard Rock Cafe. And I was just like, wow, I've been to so many countries where I wanted to see the uniqueness of their worldview and their culture, because I think decentralization, distributed worldviews, is a good thing. And the world is increasingly becoming homogenized under a handful of corporations. That's what's scary. That's what I don't like about NATO. I don't like going somewhere and just seeing the same generic homogenized fast food garbage. I like people who have something unique to bring to the table, and they retain. I like people who retain their own cultures. Instead, we do have America, this great melting pot. That's cool too. It's cool to see how people come together and their ideas become something new and unique, like Chinese food, you know, or Indian food, which is not at all like Chinese or Indian, or Thai food. Like, America has their own weird version of these cultural dishes. Here's what I fear. Under people like Lindsey Graham, who want to kill people like Putin, under NATO, you're going to get a world where there's no point in traveling. And they don't want you to. Why? Well, you fly to Japan, and what do you get? McDonald's. And people are going to all speak mostly the same language, or not. That's the homogenized world they want to bring. I don't want that. What I want is a world where cultures can have their own laws, rules, and live the way they choose, but we don't have war. It's maybe a little idealistic, maybe naive to think that we ever could get to that point. It's preferable to what we have now. And maybe that's a challenge. Maybe until there is some kind of global authority, we will have war. But it's tough. We don't want nuclear war because we don't want to annihilate ourselves. But what's more important? Diversity around the planet, a diversity of cultures and ideas, which sometimes lead to war, or homogenization so that we can avoid it? I think homogenization will result in stagnation and demise. Diversity of ideas can ultimately lead to culture clashes and conflict, so it's hard to know how things should or could be done. But I will tell you this, for the time being, perhaps it is myopic, perhaps it is nearsighted, but I certainly think it's wrong for people like Lindsey Graham to call for the assassination of a world leader, and wrong to engage in world policing the way that we do. Everybody wants to rule the world. NATO is just another group, I suppose. Hopefully it won't result in World War III. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 8 p.m. tonight over at youtube.com/timcastirl. Thanks for hanging out. We'll see you all then. Why did Vladimir Putin invade Ukraine under Joe Biden and not under Donald Trump? A question that was even brought up by Bill Maher. I know for the most part, it seems like it has very little to do with the subject matter of this video, but I think it has a lot to do with it. See, I think Vladimir Putin saw, for one, weakness in the presidency, but I think he also saw that the United States has a very serious malignancy within it. We are being devoured by it. We are being torn apart. I think that people who watch videos like this, I think people like you, for the most part, have a genuine interest in the well-being of this country, of its people, of people in general. If you take a look at Jonathan Haidt's research on moral foundations, there are six. And you can see that conservatives have all six moral foundations in varying degrees. So these include things like care, fairness, authority, loyalty, liberty, etc. The left only has care and fairness. These are the only moral foundations they tend to display. And what I do find absolutely hilarious is that libertarians only have one. Liberty. No joke. Libertarians are like, don't care. Freedom. I'm like, all right. Well, I certainly think you need a little bit of like sanctity, you know, in there. I think sanctity is one of the moral foundations. Basically, like, we uphold a variety of moral values for the sake of the betterment of the world, for each other. We want to maximize good. We want to maximize growth and sustainability. We want to make sure we're not destroying the planet. We do. But we don't want to be lied to for some person's political agenda to manipulate and steal power. Vladimir Putin knows that we are in serious trouble because this malignancy within the U.S. has grown so powerful, it can put Joe Biden in the presidency. Take a look at this story from the Daily Mail. Now on to the main subject. BLM activist named Bostonian of the Year, whose nonprofit raised $1 million, is charged with squandering much of it on rent arrears, $1,200 hotel stay, and meals at Bubba Gump Shrimp Co. Well, I mean, come on, Bubba Gump Shrimp's awesome. And Shake Shack, also awesome, after being arrested at her $450,000 home. So this is a BLM activist who was praised and celebrated as this great leader, now being charged along with her husband on an 18-count indictment with wire fraud, conspiracy, and making false statements to a mortgage lending business. When I first read this story, I said, You know, let's be real. I mean, is this legitimate? Is this BLM activist actually doing things wrong? Because I want to tell you about something. Somebody who's got a nonprofit and brings in donations, they're allowed to go to Bubblegum Shrimp. I mean, I don't think it's moral necessarily, but if you have a business and as part of your business, you go out to eat at fancy restaurants, okay. Suppose the issue arises when you're more of a nonprofit, but big nonprofits do this all the time. So I saw this and I'm like, are they singling out this BLM lady? Because I got to tell you, man, big nonprofits do way worse. And the reality is, no, you don't give these people the benefit of the doubt. Don't give them the benefit of the doubt. This lady was just transferring money to her bank account. That's right. A BLM activist indicted on fraud charges. Am I at all surprised? Now, I'm a proponent of innocent until proven guilty because that's one of the strengths of our country. So I want to see some evidence, right? You can't just come out and say she did these things. And that's why I'm like, even though I'm not a fan of these people who incite riots, who burn down cities and cause damage and all that stuff, I still think the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt. They say both have made more than $100,000 in pandemic-related unemployment benefits, while Ken and Grant also made $33,426 in diversity consulting fees. Wait, she's getting unemployment benefits related to the pandemic, but also bringing in donations. So we got questions. I look forward to seeing the state prove their case. But in a story like this, I have to wonder, grifter, right? That's what they say about people on the right, of people like Dave Rubin, of people like me, of people like Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, oh, he's trapped by audience capture. You know, he's brought in so many people, you know, on the right that he's got this right-wing audience he has to cater to, and it's just insane. So I look at stories like this, and I think to myself, certainly this weakness can be seen by other countries. Now we've got Iran firing, reportedly firing, it was a missile strike, I believe, on like near the U.S. consulate in Iraq. You've got China making bold moves with Saudi Arabia, potentially to do deals, oil deals in yuan. Russia, obviously, invading Ukraine. Because the U.S. is on the verge of falling off its pedestal and being unable to do anything about what's happening in the world. I don't like the idea of the U.S. as the world police, don't get me wrong. I liked the idea of securing our borders, having a good level of international trade and relations, which Trump absolutely was doing. I mean, man, yeah, let's be real about this. Trump was not an isolationist. Trump was America first. We got to put your own oxygen mask before you put the mask on somebody else. So secure our borders, bring our jobs back, have a healthy, stable American population. But he did negotiate the USMCA. He was negotiating trade deals. This wasn't isolationism. He did fire missiles on Syria. Not a fan. So it was a good balance of trying to restore strength to the United States, but not militaristic might necessarily, although Trump very much is a fan of that, but just stability in work and things like that. Well, this malignancy in the U.S. was able to rip him from that seat, and I think it greatly benefits Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, Kim Jong-un, et cetera, et cetera. So I wonder about the future of this country. The past couple of weeks have been strange in terms of news. And, you know, I've been seeing a lot of people talk about how it seems slow or seems weird. And I'm like, definitely. Interest seems to be down. People are just burned out a bit. And it comes and goes in waves, right? Especially the weather's getting warm and it's just like, you know, man, let me go outside and just relax a little bit. But I have to wonder about the timing of the conflicts and everything that's happening. And I wake up in the morning and I just kind of think, maybe regular people are really just burned out from hearing the same old story over and over and over again. And I mean, it's worrying, to be completely honest. We've got a major war. We've got massive funding going overseas. And people are just like, I can't take it anymore. I wonder if the culture war will end not with a bang, but with a whimper, right? And what I mean by that is a lot of people talk about peaceful divorce. They talk about, you know, civil war, for instance. I know I do. And I think it's fair to say that we're in a civil war, as I often do, and we're in a world war. But people want those phrases to represent historical conflict. They don't, right? World War II, the Great War, World War I, the Great War, right? It's because it was war on an industrial scale. It was something we've never seen before. So when people talked about war before, they were like, ah, we're not going to have it. People are going to be fighting, you know, on the hillside. And then all of a sudden it was like planes and blitzkriegs and zeppelins. And it was something they'd never experienced. It was very, very different. Warfare today is also very, very different. In terms of civil war, culture war, etc., stories like this. I wonder about the malignancy in the U.S. because certainly at this point, any sane, rational person, any real human being who has the capability to understand simple concepts would see a story like this and say, I am tired of being scammed. Shall we go through the list again, my friends? It all started with Trayvon Martin. The story was that a white man attacked, you know, Trayvon over some Skittles or whatever. The real story was that a Hispanic man saw someone walking through the backyard of several residential buildings and was suspicious. Trayvon Martin put him on the ground and started beating him. A fight breaks out. Don't get me wrong. You can criticize George Zimmerman all day and night for sure for confronting this guy. But it wasn't what the media narrative was. It wasn't a white man who just shot and killed some kid. It was a guy on the ground being pummeled, and he was Hispanic. Then we got Michael Brown. Hands up, don't shoot, they said. Well, that was a lie. I mean, it was Obama's Department of Justice or Attorney General, Eric Holder, and they said, based on where the shots entered this man's body, he was not standing there with his hands up. They lied again. And it's just lie after lie, over and over again, just consistently. We got George Floyd. There's a debate there, don't get me wrong. You know, I look at the George Floyd story and I'm just like, you know, Chauvin, he showed up after the struggle with George Floyd. George Floyd was on drugs. It's a complicated narrative. It's a complicated story. George Floyd was sitting in a vehicle behind the wheel, chewing on a speedball. I mean, that's what is it, meth and fentanyl? We don't want somebody doing drugs operating a vehicle like that. So the cops took him out. George Floyd fought with the police. They put him on the ground at his request. But let's be real. I think it is a fair point for many. And I've made the point as well. Once the police have you in custody, they're responsible for your well-being. If the cops suspect you of doing drugs, then they and they want to assume responsibility for that, which they should, then they got to call an ambulance right away. As soon as they notice this dude was suspected of doing drugs or something like that, they should have called an ambulance in and said, we got a guy, and they maybe could have saved his life. I don't think anybody should have died in any of these circumstances. Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, I'm sad to see any of them lose their lives. But once again, the story was a lie. It turns out that there's a variety of narrative. There's a nuance in the narrative around the police use of force. I do think there's a question of improper police behavior and not checking on George Floyd and kneeling on him, whether it was his neck or his shoulder or otherwise. But then we go to Ahmaud Arbery. Once again, the great lie. And it's fascinating because in this instance of the Ahmaud Arbery lie, you get people like Tulsi Gabbard, who I believe, I'm pretty sure, it's been a minute, but she even comes out and says it was the proper ruling. She's wrong. You even get people on Fox News saying it was a proper ruling. Wrong. All these conservatives coming out willing, just desperate to virtue signal because of the Kyle Rittenhouse story. Once again, another lie. Kyle Rittenhouse did not cross state lines with a firearm to hunt anybody down. Kyle Rittenhouse was in his own neighborhood because he lived in the suburbs, basically, of Kenosha, and his family lived in Kenosha. His friend gave him a weapon, and he fled for his life and only fired after someone else fired first. What did the media say? A young white supremacist went and killed several black people. It was a lie. Once again, a lie. It was just not true. I mean, honorable mention, Jussie Smollett, dude's already freaking out in jail. At least that guy went to jail. But how many of these stories need to happen before people finally say Black Lives Matter is a criminal institution that publishes lies, manipulations, and propaganda for personal gain? Maybe a little bold of me to say, to be completely honest, but Black Lives Matter started, my understanding, it's been a minute again, with Trayvon Martin. A lie. Remember, I think it was... A major mainstream news organization, we'll leave it at that, edited the 911 call to make it seem like George Zimmerman was racist. I am not joking about that. George Zimmerman called the police and said, you know, there's a guy here and he looks suspicious. And they said, what does he look like? And he's like, you know, so tall, he's wearing a hoodie. And they said, what's his race? And he says, I think he's black. The news organization cuts all that out. So all you hear Zimmerman say is, there's a suspicious guy here. I think he's black. To make it seem like George Zimmerman was some racist white guy. It's crazy. And then the media didn't even show you that Zimmerman had contusions on his face. He had visible injuries when the police brought him in. And the police said it was self-defense. Clearly, the dude's injured. Kid was on top of him. I'm sad to hear that anybody lost their life. Don't get into fights with people. Any fight you can avoid is a fight you've won. That story I like to tell. It's a video where like this Taekwondo master or whatever, he's like, I'm going to show you all the ultimate move. The one move that guarantees you will win every fight. And then he has the guy stand in front of him and they, you know, get in their stance. And the instructor just runs away, arms flailing as a joke. Everyone laughs. And he comes in and he says, that's the point. Any fight you can avoid is the fight you've won. Don't fight people for some kind of sense of personal pride or whatever. Fight to protect yourself. Anyway, I digress. How many stories do we have to have that this keeps happening? Now, again, I want to make sure I stress the point. Monica Cannon Grant, innocent until proven guilty. For sure. But to a certain degree, I'd just be like, maybe they're scamming us. Maybe the media has been lying the whole time. And this malignancy of leftist grifter cult garbage is burning this country to the ground. Now, truth be told, I think many of these people enjoy it, want it, because from the ashes of the old, they shall build anew. It was a funny meme. I follow Political Compass memes on Instagram. I think it's funny. And if you're not familiar with the Political Compass, you have the authoritarian left, authoritarian right, libertarian left, libertarian right. And it showed each of the quadrant personalities, like a guy, communist guy, in each of their quadrant looking down at something talking about civil war. And they're all saying, I can't wait until society collapses so I can rebuild it, you know, in my image or whatever. Everybody seems to think that once this country falls apart, it's their side that's going to win. You have no idea. Truth be told, it tends to be the fascists who win. Yes, no, seriously. If you look at history, Noam Chomsky, I'll throw it out to him. He said in the arena of violence, the most brutal guy wins, and that is not us. Well, Antifa wants to start some violence. Black Lives Matter wants to start some violence. But you know what? If they push us to the brink of civil war, I'll tell you who wins. First of all, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. Then all of a sudden, you'll have questions about who in the United States will actually gain any kind of dominance. Now, I think right now, for the most part, the urban city liberal types, they are the people who want to control you and everything, even if you don't live where they live. Like, I live in the middle of nowhere. I'm in the mountains. How does it make sense that in Maryland, for instance, so I live in West Virginia, but our studio's in Maryland because it's like right next to the river. How does it make sense that Baltimore has very serious crime problems? So they say, if you live in the mountains, if you live in Western Maryland in the Blue Ridge Mountains, you can't have a gun. Okay, well, hold on there a minute. We got bears out here. Now, granted, I don't want to go out and shoot bears, but I think if you were like walking around in the mountains and you saw a bear, you'd be a lot happier if you had one. Now, in West Virginia, we got constitutional carry, and I'm a resident of West Virginia. West Virginia is substantially better in many ways, and we're currently building out the new property, new space and everything, so it's going to be a heckin' good time. Maryland's a pretty bad state when it comes to gun rights. There's some okay things about it, and I only say that because relative to like New Jersey and New York, but for the most part, it's a fairly bad state with a bunch of laws that make literally no sense. Like, why is it that, you know, I'm forgetting the name. Let's just put it this way. You can have a semi-auto shotgun that can hold 6 shells as long as there's no pistol grip. You can have a KSG 25 double mag tube, 25 shell holding pump action shotgun with a pistol grip, but it can't be semi-auto. And so I'm just like, this makes no sense. It's absurdity. These laws are random and make no sense. Constitutional carry makes sense. Have a gun. There you go. A lot of the federal laws make no sense. But so my main point is, it's these people who follow Black Lives Matter, who hold their fist up, the communist fist, the red salute, and don't know its history. And then later they come out and they're like, it's just a symbol of resistance. I love that. That was Ethan Klein, my friends. Ethan Klein of H3 Podcast. He quote tweeted me because I made a joke about Zelensky of Ukraine holding up the fist, doing the red salute. And I said, I didn't know if he was supporting communism or Black Lives Matter. I was joking. It was meant to be a joke. Granted, he did do the red salute. And Klein was like, he's accusing him of being a communist for holding up the sign of the international sign of resistance.
Resistance.
Bro. Amazon.com. Jeff Bezos, American oligarch, is propping up that message with that fist. I certainly don't think siding with the U.S. government and Amazon puts you on the side of resistance. Unless you're, like, resisting the resistance or whatever. Bro, you're the establishment. You're the corpos. You're the fascists. It's remarkable. But this is the issue. No matter how many times you see stories like this, Defiant L's shout out, by the way. No matter how many times you see stories like this, you still have people claiming they're the good guys. And that's the malignancy I'm talking about. At what point can we sit back and just be like, hey, these people are lying to us? At what point do you say, I am done being lied to? Jussie Smollett is in jail right now, and you still believe these stories. Let me throw out shout out this tweet from Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh says, actually, let me slow down. There's a tweet from Andy Ngo. The school is filled with a bunch of slur, get out or else. Racist graffiti at Our Lady of Mercy High School in Rochester, New York sparks rage. Matt Walsh says, of course it was a hoax. These things are always hoaxes, always, like 100% of the time, with no exceptions in recent memory. Andy Ngo says, I struggle to think of a recent case of racist graffiti, online threats, or unwitnessed assault allegations at schools or higher education campuses being true, actually. You ready for this? This individual on Twitter says, sounds like you just don't want to see it. This happened multiple times at Emory. Linking to a story, Teach In Against Hate to respond to recent anti-Semitic graffiti. Andy Ngo says, the suspect is a black man in the swastika graffiti incident you just cited. A hoax. Remember when there was that former, I think, NFL player who had a pizza restaurant and I think like a chicken restaurant or something like that, and someone ransacked it and wrote racial slurs? Turns out it was him. How many stories do we need like this? So there are a bunch of websites that actually tracked hate crime hoaxes because these people are just lying and making this stuff up. They just make stuff up, man. Now, not every instance of hate is a hoax. Although I do think it's hilarious that, you know, in the instance where Matt Walsh says 100% of the time with no exceptions in recent memory, truth be told, I can't think of any story where it turned out to be legitimate that somebody went and sprayed something racist. Well, I suppose in their world, putting up signs that say it's okay to be white counts. Sure. But the reality is, I think we have to point out, if somebody goes and spray paints something racist and it doesn't make the news and it was just some dumb kid who got caught, because I think there was a story where some kids chalked swastikas or something, and it was a couple white kids who did it. I think you know, stories like that aren't as prominent and don't get called out because they're not because there's nothing to expose. It's like some dumb kid did some dumb thing is not a big story. Someone does engage in a hoax and then everyone wants to talk about it. That being said, I do think the overwhelming majority of these stories, if not, you know, 99.9%, I don't want to be absolute, were hoaxes. Do people care? I wonder. Defiant L's. This is the if you're not familiar with Defiant L's, you should definitely check him out on Instagram and Twitter. The Boston Celtics tweeted, our MA State Lottery hero among us is a force to be reckoned with. An activist who fights for a community, Monica Gannon Grant's efforts helped to spearhead initiatives to prevent violence, programs to feed families in need of marches to support Black Lives Matter. Then you have, about 2 years later, 18-count fraud conspiracy indictment. Yeah, her and her husband were transferring money from the nonprofit to them without notifying other members, apparently, allegedly, spending money on expensive dinners and things for themselves, and surprise, surprise. Take a look at that that other, you know, BLM organizer who has multiple houses. Take a look at the expose that, I think it was the Examiner, they went to the BLM address and nobody was there, nothing was there, and no one knows where the money is. So BLM was forced to shut down national donations. Yo, let me just say, man, you're being manipulated. You're being lied to. Now, maybe you and I know this, but how can this country survive if we live in a country with 80 plus million people who believe it no matter how many times they're lied to? I don't know, man. I just don't know. But what I can tell you is, you know, take care of yourself and take care of your community. Think about what you need. Think about what your community needs. You've got to put on your own oxygen mask before putting on the mask of others. But we also have to make sure we are thinking about community and culture. So these people may be a problem, but at this point, I'm wondering, maybe we won't get some kind of great civil war or even peaceful divorce. Maybe it won't be a divorce. It'll just be disillusion. And what I mean by that is divorce is more formal. It's like, okay, we agree to separate. No, maybe one day people just stop talking to each other, start focusing more on their local communities. I don't know. But stay strong, you know, do your thing, take care of yourself. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all next time. For those that didn't see it, or maybe you did and you want an update, I do have some more information. We can talk about what happened with the bomb squad being called out to our studio last night before the Timcast IRL show. I do also want to talk about what happened with Project Veritas and an effort by Bill Ottman of Minds to deal with censorship or at least address the issue. So last night, before we went live on Timcast IRL, I tweeted out the bomb squad was here. This was not a swatting. This was, we had called the police for a security incident, but it was related to the swattings. We've been swatted 6 times. Now, the reason why I think it was important to mention and do these updates, as much as I really don't like doing it, is that I have several concerns. The first is newsworthiness, the culture war. I'm somebody who talks about cultural issues, cultural politics, the civil war, whatever you want to call it. So when something involves me, I think it's a fair point to say potential conflict of interest for me to scream and be like, oh, the left or whatever. It's like, well, you know, we don't have that much information. I do think we have some reason to believe law enforcement, you know, already knows who's doing this. And there's a fake name involved. And the people who are doing it think using a fake name is going to, we know, you know, a bit about who they are. And maybe I shouldn't say too much. So I'll try to keep some of these details under wraps, but let me just give you some political and philosophical and moral things just right off the bat. For those that know we've been swatted 6 times, for those that know that I tweeted about the bomb squad, the first thing to address, I want to make sure that in the event anything shuts down our show, you know exactly why it happened. I also want to make sure, I mean, think about it this way. What would happen if the show didn't happen and then you got local news reports that there was an explosion or something? You'd be like, wow, like that's crazy. No, I want to, hey, this is happening right now. The second thing is, it's newsworthy and relevant to a lot of the subjects that we talk about, and it is happening to us. If it was any other news outlet that was dealing with such severe security breaches, then, you know, we would be talking about it. If someone showed up to the Daily Wire, I'm pretty sure Crowder talked about someone going to his studio and they're all armed. So, you know, we've upped our security substantially with the past few instances. But when Black Lives Matter smashed out the windows, the front doors of the CNN building, we talk about that. So I don't want to ignore this stuff simply because it is me. That being said, there are some details that I cannot give out. If a reporter was here and caught it all, I'd be like, well, there you go. When the police showed up, because we called them, it was the police that chose to have the bomb squad come out. The bomb squad ended up calling for backup. And my understanding is that they deployed one of those robots and they had the full suits on because there was a genuine scare. You know, I said on the show that I was worried the building would shake. So let me just, you know, try and slow down and wrap all these thoughts together. Just they want to stop us. They want to use force and violence against us. It's relevant to everything that's been happening in this country for some time. We are obviously a big target because I talk about this relatively often. And, you know, I take it seriously. Also, we have a lot of guests on the show that make people angry, to put it mildly, particularly on the far left. We've got a lot of new information, and I can give you some basic updates on everything that's been going on, but I have to keep some of these details under wraps. And again, I also want to talk about what happened with James O'Keefe because I think it's relevant. And I don't think it's not related in the sense of like these direct instances, but it's related in the sense that they're trying to silence us and shut us down. So in light of all of that and my personal views on this, I'll just say I absolutely recognize when people say talking about it can make it worse. I don't know how to deal with that. You know, it's true, out of sight, out of mind. But Do we sit back and have people just do this to us and say, well, if we just, we'll just keep our mouths shut? Do we speak up and say, here's what's happening? Well, I think there's a fine line. I remember seeing a bunch of these feminists on Twitter, and they're constantly posting what they get in their DMs, like, look at these mean people being mean to me. And I'm like, you realize that's what they want you to do. They want you to tweet this out. And they're like, yeah, well, I will not remain silent. And I'm like, dude, their DMs calling you ugly, okay? I get messages like that all the time. Perhaps my threshold is different from any of these online feminists. When I get nasty emails, whatever, I just ignore it. I don't know, it doesn't mean anything to me. When we get actual security breaches, swattings, or otherwise, that's physically impacting what we're doing, that's a little bit different. This is much more relevant because these are serious federal crimes. When you send nasty words to someone on Twitter, you've broken no laws. I mean, if you do it too much, maybe they'll say it's disorderly or harassment or something. In this instance, my understanding is feds are involved. I didn't directly speak with these individuals, but my understanding is feds are involved, and it involves multiple states at this point. I've mentioned this before, and that's one of the reasons why I do want to talk about it, and I do want to give as much information as I can about it. We're not talking about me saying, like, somebody said mean words to me, somebody, you know, came up to me and yelled at me. No, we're dealing with federal authorities showing up, bombs, you know, these bomb suits and robots and all of this stuff, and a genuine fear as to what's happening. I can't talk about what exactly happened with the security breach because it could compromise an investigation. I have no privy to information for the most part. Here, I should say this. I've not spoken with law enforcement. Outside of, can we film this? No. Okay. I don't know where they're at with their investigation. I don't know what they've discovered. I do think they've uncovered some information. But last night, an incident occurred that resulted in us making a phone call to the local police, who then responded with the bomb squad. The bomb squad arrived and called for backup. This is around, I believe, 7:30, just before the show. And I was told, because I went up to do the show, that a robot was deployed. I was told that there were federal investigators involved, and that they're working on the case because it is all related to all of the swattings. We were swatted 6 times this year. They're all different. I believe 2 of the 6 may be related, and then 4 seem to be separate individuals who are doing this, which is, again, a fair point to say, you know, we've had people say talking about it makes it worse. I want to let you guys in on a secret, huh? How about this? There have been other instances that we have not talked about. We have had other security issues we have not talked about. We've had some minor ones where we're like, that is frustrating and annoying. We've had slightly more serious ones, and we don't talk about it. Yet still, these things persist. So for me, it's kind of frustrating. Like, this idea that you can sit back and ignore it and just hope it doesn't happen doesn't seem to make sense. No, how about this? How about I won't give revealing details as to prevent copycats and things like that? To a certain degree, we've kept some of the details for a lot of these instances. We don't say exactly how the police are responding or what they're doing. They are responding. But it's tough, man. It's tough, and it's time consuming, and it's mind numbing. So why did this happen to us the other day? Look, we got this article from the Postmillennial. Breaking: bomb squad on the scene at Tim Pool studio. I'd just like to point out Libby. Libby's a good friend of the show, by the way. She's using this old screenshot with my old maul sword on the wall. I got the new Wakizashi up there, all right? It's not sharpened, but it is a real Wakizashi. Whatever that means, I don't know. It's a company made it. But that one's a maul sword. That was like $10. I thought it was funny. And everyone was like, your maul sword is dumb. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll get a real one. And now we have like a real sword up there. Maybe it doesn't make sense because it's like a, you know, on the wall, I've got an ornamental. I'll call it ornamental. A single shot, like, you know, it's like a pirate muzzle loaded old school, like, you know, gun. And I guess it's not legally a gun and a sword. But anyway, I digress. We had the bomb squad show up, and now I forgot. Oh, yeah. So the point of all of this is to silence us. Censorship can only go so far. Well, we play by the rules. And you guys may have seen the Nelk boys. They did an interview with Donald Trump. That interview got like 6 million views in 24 hours, and then it was taken down. Why? Well, they play a silly game. They play a dirty game. Truly, they can ban anyone they want for any reason, whenever, right? But they still have to try and be reasonable. And by they, I mean, you know, Google and Twitter and these censorship-hungry companies. They have to be careful because they're trying to maintain a system, a system that generates revenue and requires confidence and participation. Now, as for our show, Timcast IRL, we're moderates. You know, we're not anti-maskers or anti-vaxxers or anything like that. We are anti-mandate people, which maybe they'll call anti-masker or anti-vax, but, you know, I routinely say just talk to your doctor, right? That's the right thing to say, right? I personally don't believe in Donald Trump and, you know, Steve Bannon and many of these other people's theory about the fraudulent election. I think it's not true. So therein lies the challenge. We still support free speech. We still support civil libertarian values, the United States, the founding documents. All of those things are acceptable. You see, on YouTube, it's really easy to nuke someone. You get someone who comes out and they say, I believe in the Constitution. And then what happens is the joke I always make is someone at YouTube sitting there with their finger over the ban button waiting, just do it. Just cross the line. Just get it. Oh, there you go. Boom. Nuke your channel. The Hill. Rising. I mean, and this is a huge show. They got suspended because they had aired a clip of Donald Trump speaking to Laura Ingraham, I believe it was. That's it. Well, I know the rules. I know YouTube's rules. There are certain subjects that we think probably would push, you know, YouTube's buttons. So we host all of that at timcast.com. You want to support our work, go to timcast.com, watch those segments. Typically more severe cultural issues. But for the most part, our opinions are tepid enough. And I mean it. I mean, like, we're not extremists. I'm a skeptic. Someone comes out and they're like, I believe this. I'll be like, come on, man, prove it to me. But I believe in freedom. You know, I have those principles. What ends up happening is you get a show that entertains and interviews personalities who are, say, America first, who believe in the Constitution, who oppose critical race theory and the wokeness and all this other garbage. How do you get rid of a show like that? Well, you see what they do to Crowder. They will interpret to whatever they can to give him a strike. With us, we're much more moderate and tepid than that. And so it's very difficult. How can YouTube justify giving us a strike when we're so middle of the road? Ooh, but we're hosting people like Steve Bannon and Marjorie Taylor Greene. You see, it's effective. There are people who get mad and they say, you should just say everything and then get banned. And I'm like, that's so weird, man. You should leave YouTube. I'm like, we're on a major social media platform getting like a million. What do we get? Almost a million views per day on this show. What we are doing is effectively getting, you know, dissenting opinion and voices. People like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massie, Steve Bannon, Alex Jones, and many others. Stephen Marché, for instance. Able to come on the show and express these ideas, and it's important. I don't want to sacrifice that. I think we're doing a good job, but check it out. It's easy when we have Alex Jones. And they say, oh, he said something similar. Oh, so they removed the episode, gave us a strike. I had him back on. What would happen if they gave us a strike and we broke no rules? The challenge is they already have the confidence in YouTube is already shaky. So what I think is happening is not that it's YouTube, not that like someone at YouTube is going like, I'm going to swat Tim Pool. But there are activists, Antifa types, extremists. They want to get Andy No banned. They want to go after your advertisers. They want to destroy your company. But it's really hard to do. We've had activists going after Cast Castle. Yo, we don't make political shows outside of Timcast. Pop Culture Crisis, one of our shows, it's pop culture talk. It's you know, Marvel's got a new movie out because we're interested in other things. Tales from the Inverted World, Mysteries, and the Paranormal. Chicken City, our latest show. It's chickens. That's all it is. And there are activists posting screenshots of Cast Castle being like, look at these people advertising on his vlog. Okay, go to, you know, Dove Soap and be like, why are you sponsoring this? And it's a video of someone like petting a chicken. They're going to be like, I don't know. People like watching farm stuff. You see, they want to shut down our business, but we are not like other people. So why is it that Timcast gets swatted 6 times? Truth be told, we have had the conversations of downsizing. We have had the conversations about shutting things down, minimizing for the most part. Why? Because the security threats. You see, Daily Wire, what do they have? Well, they've got like 5 to 7 hosts who do political commentary and shows. It's easy to target them and go after those hosts. They can't do a whole lot, but they're trying. It's an easy way to go after them. Why are you sponsoring someone who made these comments about trans people, they say? Well, what about Cast Castle? It's like, you know, we have someone recording, I'm singing a song, I'm recording music, and it's like we're listening into like a new beat. Why are you sponsoring this show? Why not? It's exactly the kind of show you'd want to sponsor. So how do you shut down TimCast? This. It's how you do it. We don't do anything wrong. We don't really do hard investigative journalism. We have on-the-ground reporters, and we have more standard fact-checking style aggregation journalism. What I mean to say is, you know, everything requires a bit of investigation. We don't do field investigations. So for a lot of our news, we'll see news reported. This is typical in today's day and age. We'll fact check it. That's like the gist of what we do. We do primary sourcing, meaning we reach out for comments to many people, and we have tons of original reporting as well as aggregate. Field investigations, not so much. We might in the future. That's where it comes to Project Veritas. Project Veritas, how do they shut them down? FBI agents raid the home of their journalists. Ah, we'll see. These are people who are doing field investigation and undercover work, which means they'll eventually come across sensitive data or information. We don't really have that. We'll call a local restaurant and say, you've been accused of hate speech and now there's a big uproar. Can you give us a comment? We'll call, you know, a local government office and say, we're hoping you can comment on this issue that just happened in your area. Run-of-the-mill journalism. Run-of-the-mill journalism, middle-of-the-road commentary, nothing that's rule-breaking, but it is giving space to many people who are more conservative or more on the right. Project Veritas is exposing establishment actors and bad people. How do you stop Project Veritas? You can't get them banned because they're a nonprofit. So what do we see? James O'Keefe gets targeted in ridiculous ways. The feds go after him, you know? What happens to us? We get swatted. People threaten our lives effectively and target my private home. Now, I will say that some of the things that were done recently have exposed the people who do it. And my understanding is that these people think they've obfuscated, they've covered their tracks, and it's kind of, maybe I shouldn't say it, but I'm going to say it. They didn't, you know, so I think the feds may be on top of it. We're pretty sure the FBI is involved. And I'll say, I think the FBI was here because it was serious what happened the other day. But this is my point. Taking down Project Veritas when they're funded by individuals' donors' choice and they don't break the law, they have good lawyers, that is a hard shell to crack for activists and establishment players who don't like that Veritas exposes them. Send in the feds. FBI comes in and it's total BS. How do you deal with TimCast, a growing show featuring prominent voices from the right? People have been banned. We've had Alex Jones on, what, 3 or 4 times? But he's banned. People shouldn't hear what he has to say. Well, we try not to break the rules. Granted, they took down one of our episodes with him, but we try very carefully. The reason I brought up the Nelk Boys, if we were to host Donald Trump, you know, I'd probably argue with him to the point where YouTube would not take the video down. I mean, they might try and just argue, well, you know, that one did cross the line and you never know. But see, therein lies the challenge. We're fairly moderate individuals. You know, Ian on the show, for instance, is kind of a lefty authoritarian to a certain degree. Not always. His opinions are all over the place. A wild card. Seamus, Catholic conservative. Me, middle of the road, libertarianish, lib center, I think is the accurate assessment, because I do have many, you know, lib left views as well as libertarian right views, right there in the center a bit. Then we have guests that are frequently conservative. And, you know, I would say for the most part, it leans slightly more conservative in a lot of ways. Ian, I think, pulls us a little bit more in that more mainstream, liberal, establishment kind of opinion. Because, not that he is, but that he certainly has some ideas that are contrary to the libertarian, you know, constitutional republic types. It's an eclectic show. So we're able to have interesting conversations that explore nuance that makes it very hard for activists to seize control. So we get threats of violence. I mean, it's my opinion on it, but in the article from the Post-Millennial, we have a quote. Now, they quoted me quite a bit, and I said, what did I say? I think of all of the shows, as many of you know, I think out of all of the shows in politics, we may be the most swatted of 2022, 6 times so far. It's cross state lines. The latest incident that we're dealing with now, the bomb squad. It was a surprise to me. I go outside and I see a bunch of vehicles pulling up and I see a guy get out and he's got a shirt that says bomb squad on it. I can't say exactly what happened, but it's effectively a swatting, not the exact same thing. So in this instance, it was like, as I mentioned before, it was us who called it. They want to shut us down. And which brings me to this next story. All these stories in the Postmillennial, by the way. Shout out to Postmillennial. Social media company Minds and Daryl Davis tell Joe Rogan about new anti-censorship project. A missed opportunity for dialogue is a missed opportunity for conflict resolution. It's as simple as that, Davis remarked. Daryl Davis is amazing. He's an amazing guy. He's the guy who de-radicalized all these Klan members. And therein lies another part of that problem. Daryl Davis is bad for their narrative. I mean, James O'Keefe is, so am I. If you can't ban these people from the internet, how do you shut them down? Well, I don't know if they want to ban Daryl Davis. I do know he's had his exchanges with Antifa, which have been, you know, kind of hilarious in a sense, where it's like, you know, Daryl Davis is a guy who's able to talk to Klan members and de-radicalize them, but Antifa wouldn't talk to him. They say, the team at the blockchain-based social network Minds and Davis published a research paper outlining how deplatforming actually intensifies extremism and argue how a new approach to online moderation is necessary. One part of the discussion had Davis outlining his experience on having debates with others on the Minds platform, while Rogan brings up how Davis convinced members of the Klan to change their viewpoints on race and explored his previous, as explored in his previous appearance. Here, the longtime activist refines his point. In explaining how a hypothetically intense discussion plays out, Davis highlights the importance of having the other person's walls come down. That is to say, if Davis and a racist who hates black people can listen to each other's viewpoints at all whatsoever, it can have a significant impact on the racist in the long term. Bill Ottman says walls coming builds off the walls coming down point by adding how neuroscientist Sam Harris previously studied people's actual brain waves with regards to how an individual subconsciously reacts to being presented with ideas or concepts they don't like. So here's why I bring these things together. They want the chaos. And the establishment, the Democratic activists, the far left, conflict is good for them, Antifa. They don't want these conversations, which is why they want the censorship. What they want is for their people to be isolated and fester with hatred and then be unleashed. But what happens when you take a Trump supporter and you take a Democrat and you remove their iconography, symbolism, and just have them stand next to each other as regular people and watch a problem? You take a Trump supporter, you take a Democrat voter, and you have them walk down the street together with no information about each other, and then have them come across a man being racist. Both of them will get angry. But what happens if you separate the two? The Democrat person's going to be like, that racist person must be a Trump supporter. Or they'll make that assumption. These two people can come together, both condemning racism, and then be like, hey, wait a minute. You're the other side. Maybe we agree on a lot of things. Now, it's difficult in the long run because people associated with what they call the right tend to know what the left believes. People associated with the left don't know what people called the right tend to believe. And then what ends up happening is a lot of people on the right are like, look, I know that these Democrats think these things. I disagree with them. They don't know what you think. And there's the issue. How many people have, I can't tell you how many people have said to me, you made me like Steve Bannon. And that's it. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor Greene was demonized and called crazy. And I have a bunch of people who are even conservative who are like, I thought she was nuts. She comes on the show and she speaks articulately. She expresses her ideas. And then she says that she actually forces Congress to do her jobs. And people are cheering for her all of a sudden. How do you stop that conversation? It breaks no rules. The swattings. So I'll level with you guys. Part of me just says it would be so easy to stop trying to deal with any of this. Wind everything down and just live a relaxing life. Truth be told, before I had, you know, when I had only 100,000 subscribers on YouTube and I was getting 25,000 views per day. That's it. 25,000 views per day. I was making good money. I was making upper middle class money just off of 100,000 subscribers. No real big sponsors. This was like even before I had any sponsors like Virtual Shield. I was making enough. I had my apartment. I'd play video games and go out and skate most days. And then I would do one video for 10 or 15 minutes and it funded and paid for everything. Seriously. But I decided that I had to work more and do more and strive and have an impact and help make things better and just work as hard as I possibly could. And I did. Now the company's big. We have 30 plus employees. The revenue is substantially higher. Truth be told, if you just look at our stats, you can tell it's in seven figure range. And, well, I don't know how many details I should be, giving out in this regard, but it's higher than that. I mean, the company's big and we're expanding. We're building a new facility. And if we keep doing this, we have a chance of actually making a serious and positive impact. It's hard to stop. Our momentum is growing with your support, especially those over at timcast.com. But my point is, sometimes when you deal with this incessantly, and people tell you, you know, look, when you have the bomb squad come to your house, they say, unfortunately, you have no choice but to ball it up, go sit in the corner and accept that these people are going to do these things to you, and you can't talk about it. And I'm like, nah, man, I want to talk about it. I want to talk about it. It's tough. It is. So part of me does say, you know, maybe I go mountain biking, go snowboarding, go skateboarding. Maybe I just, you know, go back to one small, short 10-minute update per day, accept an upper middle class life. I'm not driven by money or anything like that. I don't know. It's irrelevant. Mo money, mo problems is true. Don't get me wrong. Mo money solves basic problems, all of them. No, seriously, it does. But I don't do any of this work because I was driven by money. If I was driven by money, I would have stopped doing it a long time ago, because certainly at this point, there are easier ways to make money than risking my life and causing all these problems. Well, I'm not going to do it. The conversation we had the other day was, if we stop or deviate in any way, we just tell these people that they win. I won't tolerate that. Screw them. Work is tough. It's frustrating. It's hard. I hope that it's having a serious positive impact. And I think it is. And I think that's why they come after us. So maybe once this all wraps up, you know, I can give you the full details and break down step by step everything that's happening. But I'll just put it this way. You know, the feds are involved. That's my understanding. And cross state lines, it's very, very serious. And a lot of misinformation out there. But the people who are doing it, they think they're covering their tracks. They're not. Put it that way. If you think you can pull these things, I'll tell you this, man. The capability of the feds to track stuff down is stronger than most of these people realize. Most of these, I'll leave it there without giving out too much details. But we'll keep doing our thing. We're not going to back down. I appreciate you guys hanging out for this stuff. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 4 p.m. over at youtube.com/timcast. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then.